Welcome back to the AgTech So What podcast, brought to you by Agventic. I'm your host, Sarah Nolette. Today, we're back with episode 3 in our Regen Ag series. If you missed the last two, definitely check them out and let us know what you think about regenerative agriculture, the term, the practices, and the hype. Today, we're looking at Regen Ag through a different lens. Our guest is Jay Watson, who oversees the Regen Ag work for General Mills. Jay started out at General Mills in procurement, sourcing and hedging ag commodities such as corn and oats. In 2015, he moved to an oat sourcing role, where he saw the launch of their oat sustainability program, which we talk about. And then in 2017, Jay joined the sustainability team across all priority ingredient categories for General Mills, where recently they've begun to focus on soil health and ultimately regenerative agriculture. Here's Jay Watson.
I was given the opportunity to come to the sustainability full-time to work across all of our 10 priority ingredient categories in 2017. And so I've been on the team for about 3 years. Some of that focus on continuous improvement and efficiency and sustainability has pivoted in the last few years to identifying that soil health is really a key unlock, and soil health being a cornerstone for regenerative agriculture. One of our newer commitments is that 2030 commitment to advance regenerative agriculture on 1 million acres.
I imagine most listeners are familiar with at least some of the General Mills brands. They produce and market more than 100 brands in more than 100 countries on 6 continents. You might recognize names like Betty Crocker, Hamburger Helper, Pillsbury Refrigerated Dough, or Latina Fresh Salsa. They're also big in cereals, with brands like Cheerios, Chex, and a favorite treat of mine when I was a kid, Cinnamon Toast Crunch. What does all this mean from a sourcing and sustainability perspective?
The lion's share of our business globally is in North America, but we do have operations in many other countries, not as maybe as large of a global player as some of our peers in the space, but we're big buyers of grain and dairy. As you can imagine, with things like cereal and snacks, Häagen-Dazs ice cream, Yoplait yogurt. We have a big meals and baking portfolio, so big purchasers of wheat. Again, my oat sourcing experience, spent a lot of time with our Cheerios organization and also Nature Valley. Also had a chance to have a few conversations with Uncle Toby's down in Australia. So, you know, but we buy, it runs the gamut, right? We have fruits, vegetables, nuts, you know, animal proteins based on the different products we market in different countries around the globe. So that's why our sustainability work is pretty diverse. I spend some part of my days working on grains and in North America, and I might be talking about dairy in France. And then another part of the day might be onto cocoa or vanilla in our sustainability programs there, which are, you know, very focused on smallholder farmers and their livelihoods and communities.
General Mills' approach to sustainability programs and public commitments has evolved over time, focusing on different metrics and areas of their supply chain, including both their operations and their suppliers.
Before my time, probably back in around 2011, 2012, we charted a global raw material risk assessment to understand, based on what we purchased and where those items were coming from, what sustainability risks and opportunities were present. And out of that assessment came our 2020 sustainable sourcing commitment that we announced in 2013. And oats is one of those categories. So just connecting back to some of my experience. So we have, I'm going to try to get all 10 of them. So oats, U.S. wheat, dry milled corn in the United States, sugar beets, sugar cane, dairy, fiber packaging, palm oil, vanilla, and cocoa. So those are the 10 categories that we set a commitment for 2020. So this is a big year for that reason.
I had a look, and according to the 2019 Global Responsibility Report, General Mills is sourcing 91% of the raw materials for these 10 commodities sustainably. Given the range in the commodities on this list, General Mills has had to use different strategies and definitions for sustainability.
We have different approaches to our sustainability definition and our implementation plan, just based on what we believe those opportunities are as it relates to social, environmental, and economic sustainability. At least in North America, a big focus again, in those grains, and sustainability being defined as continuous improvement over time against environmental metrics. So taking something like yield and flipping it to the inverse to say, how much land does it take to produce a bushel of corn or a ton of sugar beets, and hoping to drive improvement over time. So we have data for some of our programs going back to 2012, some that are newer, so we can kind of document where have producers become more efficient from a natural resource standpoint. And that's a lot of the work, at least for North America and some of those crops. The other, you know, cocoa and vanilla, there's different definitions and approaches for those types of ingredients.
Yeah, increasingly obvious that it's not a simple answer. And even coming out with some of those goals is not a straightforward task or commitment to make. I actually reviewed a number of food companies' sustainability plans, and it was around in 2013-14, I think, just when you guys had made this commitment. And it struck me how different everyone's approach was, and seemingly how different the drivers might be for different companies, you know, risk versus marketing versus right thing to do, and how aspirational the targets were, you know, big lofty goals, and in some cases, not a lot of clarity of whether you'd get there, how you'd get there. Do you have a sense of, at that time when General Mills made that first plan for those 10 commodities, what the drivers were and how much of a really big stretch goal it felt like versus something that was very achievable?
Well, I think it's a great question. I think we have a history of making bold commitments with and being very open about not knowing how to get there. But the commitment with a long enough runway, I think, gives us the time to be able to figure some of those things out. I think when we made the 2020 commitment, we had one sustainability resource, and now we probably have four or five. And so just the team has grown to support the work. We've also done quite a bit of work with our sourcing organization to build capacity and capability within our buyer network, from which I came from, to really be partners in our approach and to advancing the sustainability agenda, really even in some cases having ownership of some of our targets within those category sourcing responsibilities. So that's been huge. But yeah, I think with the 2020 sourcing sustainability commitment and also our Scope 3 science-based greenhouse gas reduction target, both of those are really good instances where we knew it was the right thing to do, and that's been a core value of General Mills for quite some time, but we knew that it was a proactive play to kind of lead in the industry and create a bit of an invitation for other companies to follow suit, and that's happened. And so a long history of leading in this kind of sustainable sourcing space, and without really having all the ideas or all the innovations really in place to be able to drive to the targets that we set for ourselves. We know that a lot of that is yet to come for, say, our climate ambition. And certainly as we think about regenerative ag, there's lots of enabling technologies and partnership models that are not here yet that will be really critical to advancing towards our target.
When General Mills made these commitments, Jay was working in sourcing, focused on oats. What was it like working with their suppliers, oat farmers, to meet these sustainability targets?
I was first proud as a category buyer because, you know, I think we're all trying to find additional purpose in our role. And if we can connect it to something like sustainability and positive outcomes for people, planet, and profit, that's kind of another nice area to work in, if in addition to the other accountabilities you have as a buyer. But what I also appreciated was that General Mills' approach was to try and drive towards industry standards, right? And so our early involvement and leadership within something like Field to Market, this Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture, the whole goal was to say, let's create a kind of a standard approach to measure sustainability for row crops in the United States. We can't all afford to be doing separate things, using separate approaches, working in silos. And really, if we're asking the producer to participate and provide data, we can't be asking them to fill out 10 different surveys for 10 different companies that they might be selling to, right, through different aggregators or grain companies. And so it's not maybe a story of a specific point in time, but a story a lot over several years of seeing that alliance come together, being able to participate in a process where there is kind of agreement on an approach to measuring sustainability and then continuously improving that approach while getting input from food companies and retailers, farmers, agribusinesses. That's how the committees and sectors are set up in the field to market, so that it really is meant to be this big tent that can come together to align on some shared approaches, principles, and standards, so that we're making it as easy as possible for different supply chain actors, including producers, to participate. And so it's been nice to see that.
Jay is talking about Field to Market, the Alliance for Sustainable Agriculture, a multi-stakeholder initiative that includes grower groups, brands like General Mills, conservation groups, universities, and even ag tech companies who have all come together to create ways of defining, measuring, and advancing sustainability across food, fiber, and fuel. One of the big things they do is benchmarking sustainability performance using a tool called FieldPrint. Through this work at the farm level, Jay has spent time on farms and with growers, learning from them about what's working and what drives them to make decisions on farm.
As you can imagine, working on oats, I spent a fair bit of time in Canada because that's one of our Manitoba and Saskatchewan are key growing regions for us. So just to understand the benefits of oats in a rotation and hearing producers talk about why they like to grow oats, not because there's Cheerios for a market or Nature Valley, but how it can be really advantageous for them to have it as part of the rotation with other crops like canola or soybeans or wheat. So lots of learning opportunities.
I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I've definitely had the experience of learning about a specific practice or, you know, whether it's chemical usage or some kind of tilling or rotations or, yeah, anything that might get talked about. And then you go talk to an actual farmer about how it applies to their operation right. And what does and doesn't make sense. And you realize, you know, just how oversimplified some of the narratives are at the consumer end. I don't know if that's ever happened to you.
Totally. Yeah. And there's been some unique experiences too, where we've had the opportunity to bring influencers, key like food influencers, out to a farm. And, you know, that's been eye-opening, I think, for the farmers, for these food bloggers, for us at General Mills. Yeah, to just kind of open the eyes and kind of squash some of the misperceptions or misconceptions about farming. I think one of my favorite ones was just this concept of kind of corporate farms and, you know, large scale operations that don't really care about the products that they're producing or don't really care about the end consumer. And, you know, we had an opportunity to bring some folks out to one of the producers that's connected to our Cheerio supply chain. And, you know, we had homesteading photos out as part of this dinner where you can say, you know, this is a fourth generation farm. These are people, these are families that this is how they make their living, and we should understand and appreciate it a little bit more and the role they play in the food value chain.
Yeah, sure. I love that nuance of the family farm versus corporate farm. For some reason in agriculture, we like to punish businesses for being successful and run well with systems and processes. We'd much rather think of them as tiny and unorganized for some reason, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So that's, yeah, really, really good learnings and great to be raising the profile of those things. It sounds like, and tell me if I'm wrong, Jay, in summarizing here, that the initial sustainability work at General Mills was around sourcing and then kind of shifted or evolved to have a greenhouse gas emissions focus, and now has evolved again to think about soil health and regenerative agriculture. A, is that true? And B, what's driving the new focus on regen ag?
Yeah, I'd say it's true. I'd add maybe one piece. The work started in our own manufacturing facilities before sourcing, right? So working on energy efficiencies or cutting out waste, you know, things that we could control, right? And so that work's still going on today, right? But I think some of the insights as part of our enterprise footprint effort was that from an emissions standpoint, our manufacturing facilities only represent about 10% of our emissions if we look from farm all the way to fork to landfill. And so that's where sourcing and agriculture came into clear focus, is if we want to make a real impact and reduce our footprint, we need to go and fish where the fish are. And that agriculture became the clear place to do that. And not just from an emission standpoint, but also if we think about our water usage, you know, a large chunk of that's in agriculture as well.
As General Mills moved from assessing the risk of various raw materials in the supply chain to identifying opportunities to making commitments around their environmental footprint, soil health became a key focus.
Give a lot of credit to Jerry Lynch, who was our previous chief sustainability officer, who saw the potential and promise of soil health and worked to get buy-in internally to make some leading investments through our General Mills Foundation to support some of that foundational soil health research, education, outreach, extension efforts. And once we got into soil health, then it became kind of a natural evolution to soil health as the cornerstone for regenerative agriculture, with regenerative agriculture having positive outcomes, not just with soil, but what we talk about is biodiversity, water, farm profitability, economic resilience.
And when that approach around soil health initially and then Regen Ag more broadly came about, what was the response from either, well, both of the consumer side and the grower side in terms of that term and or those, you know, set of practices and principles?
Yeah, I'll address the consumer piece first. I mean, I don't think there was a lot of consumer communication or focus on that, at least initially, because I think we needed to figure out more about soil health and what it could mean and how we could activate some different things within our key sourcing region. So I don't know that there was much of a reaction in the consumer front because we weren't really talking about it. Of course, we've done more of that since with some of our smaller challenger brands in our natural and organic business with things like Annie's Homegrown or Epic Provisions, where there's more of a connection to soil health and regenerative agriculture. So we're starting to get a little bit more consumer insights in that space. As it pertains to farmers, you know, I would say in some parts of the country, again, speaking mostly about North America, I think there was, for those that kind of were maybe practicing soil health principles or applying them on their farm, I think the reaction was pretty positive. Okay, like you're seeing what I'm seeing, General Mills, and kind of a little bit of like, what are you going to do about it? How can you help me? But there's certainly a lot of producers that didn't really understand soil health yet, hadn't heard it. Where they lived, it wasn't really a movement yet. And there's still parts of the country where I think that's still the case. But I think coming back to our sustainability goals and objectives, if we're focused on driving better resource efficiency as part of our continuous improvement efforts, we would be generating reports through some of our tech data partners to say, okay, here's your environmental footprint for your field and all your fields that you enrolled in the program. Here's the average of the group. The goal has always been enable some of that benchmarking so a producer can make a decision about what to do on their farm, maybe a little bit differently to drive improved environmental outcomes. And soil health kept rising to the top, I think, for us and hopefully for some producers to say, okay, well, if I want to, say, for example, improve my energy use efficiency, might I look into something like no-till because I'm going to be burning less diesel? But probably in some cases, not necessarily connecting that to soil health. It's more just about economics. And that's where I think, depending on who you're talking to, they're adopting different and new principles or practices, maybe because of soil health, maybe because of economics, maybe about farm legacy, maybe they're worried about regulation. And so really trying to bring a very broad and diverse value proposition to producers as we think about enabling this movement, given that we know no one farm is the same as another.
Mm. Yeah. How do you, I mean, that's definitely a challenge, Jay, of each farm's different and the practices that might work in one area aren't actually the ones that would work in another, or, you know, they don't have the same underlying conditions or capabilities to take advantage of those practices. How do you, and you mentioned data, how do you think about General Mills' role? Is it kind of raising awareness and doing some of that benchmarking? Are there incentives that you guys provide, whether premiums or long-term contracts, to actually move the needle or tip the scales on some of this stuff? How do you guys see your role?
Yeah, we're doing most of those things. It just is dependent on the product and the supply chain, the region, the kind of producer readiness. Again, in some of those brands where we're marketing it, there's different contracts in place. There's premiums with more direct farm relationships. But in other places, it's in some of the pilots that we've announced publicly, it's more around supporting producers in their kind of evolution in their approach and mindset to managing farm. And so it's more education, training, and technical assistance, one-on-one coaching. And that's funded by General Mills. You know, that's something we can do now, is to support that technical assistance, as we see that as being a really key gap. Because we'll hear from a lot of producers is, hey, you know what, I'm energized. I just went to a soil health conference or learned about regenerative ag from someone, and I got back to my farm and I'm just not sure where to start or what to do, right? Because it is unique to their operation. And so what we've done to kind of fill some of that need is to partner with the Soil Health Academy on the on the education, but then also Understanding Ag, which is one of Gabe Brown's consulting organizations, where there's a regenerative ag consultant that comes alongside a producer to say, okay, let's build a plan for your unique operation. And we're funding those producers in our programs for 3 years as part of our pilots. And so that's, you know, it's not a financial assistance play where we're providing cost share. We are doing that in some places, but we really view one of the key barriers is this understanding of how the ecosystem could function and an understanding of how to apply regenerative principles to a unique operation. So that's where we've chosen to make investments. And we've had pretty good interest from producers in the regions where we have pilots. I mean, say we've always had more producers who want to be a part of the program than we have funding for, which I guess is a good problem to have. Sure. And we're trying to figure out, right, like, for that specific place, because we are taking more of a place-based approach to try and understand the uniqueness of that system and those producers in the program, like, what is it that they need? We can believe that we know, but until we sit down and speak with them, they may not need much technical assistance. Maybe it is something different. What does the enabling environment look like for each place? And then I think we can flex and adapt as needed to say, okay, if we have funding, may we move a little bit more of the funding or focus to social and cultural support or financial cost share.
Another key incentive that gets talked about in the sustainability space is premiums. Actually paying the producer more for a certain practice or outcome. Jay says there are some challenges with this, especially for regen ag.
Premiums when we don't really have yet a way or alignment with a business to talk about it is a tough proposition, one that all farmers want. And I address the question all the time. If a consumer is not asking for it yet, it's not to say we can't create demand, because that's what we do as a food company. But regenerative ag is a tough thing to understand for many, and we have an opportunity to help people understand kind of like general farming practices and how the system works, let alone a very different way of thinking about the farm as an ecosystem and being able to produce food while restoring the function of that ecosystem at the same time. And so it's tough to sell in, hey, we should pay a premium for this product if we don't know how we're going to talk about it and drive value. And if we're going to pay a premium for the product, we really need to make sure that we get that grain or that milk or whatever it is. And it requires a different supply chain infrastructure to do that if we want to segregate some of that to be more unique than the commodity grains or animal proteins or dairy that we're buying. And so I think, yeah, just understanding what's the need and like going to origin, like listening, you know, something that's, I think, sometimes challenging to do, but like putting our goals and interests to the side a little bit and just really trying to understand what role can we best play to accelerate this momentum that might already exist and to just meet producers where they're at. So I'm pleased that we've been able to kind of get on a good path with the pilots that we have up online now. They are pilots because we're learning a lot, and I don't think we would say that we have it all figured out. And like I mentioned before, well, a big part of that learning is just learning from producers and what's working, what's not. And so we're making sure to remind leaders internally at General Mills that this is something we're piloting and we're going to need to be flexible and agile, but it's the right thing to do. And producers need support right now. And as a food company, we have a unique role to play where we can connect consumer to producer. But one of the other things we've done is really, I think, developed a unique experimental design, because a lot of the research in the agricultural space is fairly reductive. It's let's control all things but one variable and see what the outcome of the change in that practice is on a particular outcome. Well, that's not really how these systems work. They're living systems that are connected. And so we need to study the whole system. And so our research and the outcomes that we're measuring, our treatment for this research that we're doing is a farmer who has regenerative education and support and who is bringing a regenerative approach to their operation compared to a farm that's not. And there could be five things that that producer is changing. So we're not, it might be hard to stomach for some, but we're not going to be able to, if we have a change in an outcome, say in soil health, we're not going to be able to point to the one thing that drove that, because it's not one thing. It's a systems approach to managing the operation. And so that's a space that we've kind of plugged, because some of the research institutions in these regions, although some of the research may want to go there, I don't know that they're really set up to do that type of research. And so I think it's a place where we've been leading, and so grateful to have a really strong technical team on staff. I mean, one of the food companies have a PhD soil scientist, a couple other PhD agronomists. Like, that's not really that common. So I'm so thankful that those are some of the peers I get to work with, because I want this work to be impactful for the producers, for General Mills, but I also want it to be credible and to be supported by the best available science.
Yeah, well, that's right. The supply chain complexity and the farming systems complexity means that making some kind of commitment to consumers is actually really difficult. And right now, we often don't have the data or technologies to be able to say, yes, for sure, this much carbon was sequestered, or this much soil health was improved, or, you know, this much regen was done, because that's not even a concept that exists. And if it was, we wouldn't know what to measure, and it would be different in different areas. And so I guess you end up, or the fear maybe is that you end up with what a criticism of regen might be, which is that it's kind of evangelical, that it's squishy and more about a movement, which is a word that you used, and doesn't have that science. And yet you've mentioned science and data a couple times. So yeah, I guess what's your kind of response to maybe a criticism of regen that it's more evangelical and not grounded in solid science or good farming practices?
Yeah, to those critics, I would just ask them to share what their definition of regenerative agriculture is, because I think it varies. And ours is focused on outcomes. And you can't really have an outcomes-focused approach if you're not measuring outcomes with the best available science. And so, I mean, if regen was just, some might be thinking about regen as the next natural, where, right, like, it doesn't really mean anything. I mean, that was a big issue in the States. Like, what does natural mean? There's no standard, like organic, right? You know, what does natural production or natural farming practices mean? With regenerative agriculture, I mean, I think anybody who will listen who's thinking about making some sort of claim or just talking about regenerative agriculture as part of their strategy, really, I'm really pushing them to say, you need to measure regeneration then. Because I think that's what makes it legitimate and different, is that if we can measure soil health, so say aggregate stability or water infiltration or microbial activity or soil organic matter, soil carbon, if we can show that those things got better over time, then we can talk about how this farming approach regenerated soil. The same can be said for water, profitability, biodiversity. We just need to make sure that we have the right protocol to measure those things. So I'd say, for companies or different organizations that are talking about regenerative ag, but don't really have a measurement approach, yeah, I think in a lot of ways, regenerative ag is going to feel pretty squishy. But when we're thinking about regenerative ag, one of those focuses being on soil health and soil carbon, we can't have it be squishy, because we intend to connect our regenerative ag outcomes and soil health and soil carbon to our enterprise-wide greenhouse gas reduction commitment. So for any company out there that's making a scope 3 science-based target that includes agriculture and agricultural emissions, soil health provides that promise to say, okay, can we see how much carbon's in the soil now and how much later, so we can understand influx and outflux, and then what might we be able to account for in our supply chain? So it's very real, very rooted in science for us. And I think some of the criticism is from those that maybe are looking at regenerative ag differently, defining it differently, and maybe don't understand all the different approaches out there that are really focused on measuring regeneration. And I'd say that we're not unique. I think there's others looking at this, but we have some unique resources at General Mills that are building the research plans and protocols to say, how do we measure regeneration? Because if we're going to say regenerative ag, we need to be able to point to something getting better or something restoring or being rebuilt.
Do you take the same approach, Jay, that you have in the carbon footprinting and greenhouse gas space of partnering with others, especially on that data collection or measurement side? And if not yet, you know, where are there opportunities in that kind of ag tech space?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in order to interpret an outcome, let's say we baseline soil carbon and then come back 5 years and see how it changed, we need to understand what happened on that field. And so we still need farm management data. And so we're leveraging similar partners as we've worked with in our 2020 sourcing sustainability commitment to say, yes, we're going to be measuring outcomes versus modeling outcomes. And it's a costly and not scalable approach now, but we're looking at technology to help us reduce costs and measure, you know, whole watersheds or whole regions. That's part of, you know, what our tech team is working on. But we need to understand like how those practices evolved over time, because to just have two data points but not a whole lot of understanding of what changed isn't super helpful. So it still requires that we get farm level detail. And I know there's sensitivity in sharing field information or farm level detail with food companies and downstream supply chain actors, and how we've been able to get producers comfortable with that as our pilots really, really focus on like one or two fields. So we're not asking them for their full farm P&L. We're just saying, hey, for these fields, the intent is that we're going to develop a little bit of a report and case study at the end of the day. So you can say, for these fields, I know what my profitability was. I know what the soil health was and soil health metrics, how they changed. I understood what kind of biodiversity was present at the beginning and how that evolved over the time, what the impacts were to water. So yeah, we rely on some of these different companies that have tech or software solutions that are already working with producers in their data, have connected them in with some of our pilots to ensure that we can interpret the results that we have if we're making these investments over a 3 to 5 year time period. Some of that same tech, I think, is there's promise in more remote sensing, thinking about using satellite imagery to look at be able to detect no-till and cover crops and a broad swath of acres for a whole region. We've done some of those tests with different partners out there. And if you add a soil carbon model to that, you can estimate soil carbon change on thousands of million acres in a specific region of focus for us. We've done that already. So that's where ag tech is interesting. There's also some really interesting innovations to think about passive collection of like insect biodiversity with cameras and infrared. And so, you know, there's great tech emerging that I think will enable more of this progress and acceleration. But I think that some of the best tech is in nature and in farmers' minds and like their approach. Like if we can just tweak the approach and the mindset, but then also help producers see that if they're farming in concert with nature and take some of nature's principles and apply them to their operation, that that's going to outcompete some of the tech that's out there. And in a lot of cases, might be more profitable too. So, I mean, it's not easy and it's a journey for sure for a lot of producers who want to go down this path. But some of the best tech is proven and it lives out in nature.
Amazing, Jay. Thank you so much. It's a super complex space and really great to see the downstream views on this and actually how much of it is producer-centric as opposed to consumer-focused or kind of marketing-oriented. I wasn't sure how that would land, but that's been really encouraging for me and hopefully for many of the producers listening.
Yeah, and I just think any producer that's listening, I think would acknowledge that this is a producer-led movement and we just want to do what we can to fuel some of this fire and be an enabler. And thanks for the opportunity to be able to share a little bit about what we're doing and why we're excited about regenerative agriculture.
So that's a wrap on episode 3 in our Regen Ag series. The first two, in case you missed them, featured two Australian farmers with very different views on Regen Ag. Catch up at agtechsowhat.com and leave us a comment or send us a message with your thoughts on Regen Ag. And for anyone who wants to dive deeper on this topic, we're hosting a live panel discussion called Regen Ag, Greenwashing or Good Business, on the evening of September 3rd, Sydney time. The link to register is in the show notes. Hope to see you there.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of Ag Tech So What. You can stay up to date with the latest episodes and news at agtechsowhat.com. And as always, if you have any feedback or other guests to recommend, we'd love to hear from you. Just hop on the website and leave us a comment or send us a message. Finally, if you like what you're hearing, and we hope you do, please share the podcast with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next time.